Hey, everybody, and welcome to our first episode of Adventures in Machine Learning. This week on our panel, we have Gant Laborde.
Hey, hey.
We also have Eric Chalmers.
Hello.
I'm Charles Max Wood, coming to you live over my phone because my dang computer won't launch Zoom. This machine is not learning to do what I want. Let's just put it that way.
Are you a software engineer trying to learn machine learning? Then you should check out the course from educative.io called Machine Learning for Software Engineers. It has 87 lessons, 8 quizzes, 115 challenges, 163 playgrounds, and 2 code snippets. In other words, it's not just a set of videos that tell you how to do the thing. It actually walks you through all of the processes for machine learning. It gives you quizzes. It makes you do challenges. It's very hands-on. It's done with experts from companies like Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and Apple. And it is a terrific course that I've been learning to do machine learning. So go check it out at devchat.tv/learnml. That's devchat.tv/learnml. And that'll take you to the right place. You can sign up for the course.
That's what you should have gone with, Charles. Let's just say your GPU is pegged out right now. That's why you're using your phone.
Actually, my CPU is pegged out right now. That's why I'm using my phone. Of course, then it says it's finally saying that it's got 73% idle. And so now Zoom just won't launch. So whatever. So I'm going to keep playing with it. And then my audio quality will get markedly better sometime. And we'll deal with it. Anyway, I don't want to derail too much of the show because of my own issues. Since this is the first episode, I thought we could kind of do a couple sort of introductions. One of them is going to be, you know, of us as the panel. And then another introduction that I'd like to see is, you know, just kind of a walkthrough of what machine learning is and how people can get involved and things like that. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's intimidating for a lot of people. I think other people, it's just like, you know, it's like, well, this is a really cool thing that I can get involved in. And then they, you know, they don't know where to start. And so I'd love to just kind of get into all of that stuff and just see what we can bring out for people as far as learning resources. And hey, this isn't as complicated or scary as you think, and where we think this is going. Because machine learning, at least to me, is one of those technologies I really see coming out big already. And I think we're only scratching the surface. I think in another 3 to 5 years, we're going to see some major growth in this area. And I'd like to stay on top of it so that people aren't just coming in and going, wait, where did all this come from? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Eric, actually, technically I've known Gant longer. Gant, why don't you go first and let us know who you are and you know, what your background is with machine learning and all that stuff.
Yeah. So I'll start this off by saying, I've been developing for 20 years, and I only recently discovered machine learning, which is really, I know it's been around for forever, and a lot of universities taught it. Mine didn't. It just wasn't popular. I mean, obviously, it was the AI winter for a good while, and I think it kind of resurfaced back into the public eye in 2012, so I missed it. Like, I didn't get any of it, and I wasn't interested either, because, I mean, just writing algorithms to solve tic-tac-toe didn't seem like they would scale. So about a year ago, I was kind of, actually a little bit over a year, I started to get the bug. I started to see it in really cool ways. You know, Silicon Valley had the episode of Hot Dog, Not Hot Dog, which was fantastic. And they actually released that app. So that was a real app. So,
oh, wow.
And you could actually download it, and it worked. And it worked directly on your phone, written in React Native. And to me, that's probably my wake-up call, I'd say, that I was like, not only can you actually do this, you can kind of like have it work on your phone. And I was like, oh, you know what I'll do? I'll spend one weekend and learn machine learning. And here it is a year later. I have never gotten out of it. It's so exciting. I took the machine learning course by Stanford. I took neural networks, deep learning, took machine learning, TensorFlow, Google Platform, TensorFlow and practice specialization. I'm now actually a Google developer expert in machine learning. And so that's added as well. I just haven't looked back. This is by far the most exciting and adventurous use of tech I have seen in a long time. And it's really cool to be on a podcast where we can continue to explore it while it starts to really hit the world.
Well, that explains a lot, because I've been hounding people for React Native Radio to come back on.
Yeah. That is true. I'm seeing another technology on the side, and I apologize. But truth be told, I am bringing it back to React Native in a lot of cool ways. I did a talk at React Native EU about three different ways to bring in machine learning into React Native. And recently, TensorFlow.js supports React Native. So one of my really favorite libraries I did was called Not Safe for Work JS.
Which is, sounds interesting.
It's actually hilarious. The logo is really good. And what happens is it's client-side indecent content checking. The concept is like Facebook and Google have thousands of people to, you know, check content and make sure it's all fine. But your everyday person, if I sent you a picture, first of all, it's private. That's between you and me. And then second of all, how would you know until you looked at it that it's something indecent? Well, you could just, this algorithm's open source. And the idea is, oh, in JavaScript actually, or in any kind of, but the cool thing is I got into JavaScript. You can actually just say, hey, is this picture decent or not? It gives you back a percentage of how much it really thinks it's safe or not. And so the cool thing is I did that as a website and that kind of blew up. And now we're about to release it in React Native as well. So just already taking this really cool technology and doing a lot of open source with it. So that way people can sort of get their fingers in it. And it's all nice and wrapped up. So you don't have to know machine learning in order to use it.
Nice. Yeah. In fact, it's kind of funny because the reason you're on the show mm-hmm. or the reason I reached out to you about machine learning was that I was talking to your business partner, Jamin Holmgren.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And he mentioned that you were doing machine learning. And I'm like, well, frick, I'm trying to get this show going forever. And so I reached out. You were kind of, you know, we finally had enough people to get this going. So
that's awesome. I'm 1,000% into this stuff like every day. Yeah. So this is perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those who are interested, they can go back and listen to old React Native Radio episodes with you on them. So.
Oh, yeah. And you could get me in a few of those. I will definitely show up for a few of them.
Yeah. And I think it'd be interesting to dive into some of the machine learning stuff with React Native and just see where it goes. And also, you know, if you're doing it with React or other things there too, it'd be interesting to get you on some of the other shows. But
yeah,
we'll make that happen and do some cross promo. But yeah, Eric, what's your background?
So I'm pretty new still. I've been working with machine learning for about 8 years now, both in academic research setting and industry setting. So I did a PhD in this stuff where I was trying to use machine learning to optimize scoliosis treatments. It was a lot of fun. Like, getting any headway with this kind of stuff in medicine is tough, right? Because you're fighting against 200 years of established tradition. But it was a good project, a lot of fun. And then after PhD, I went and did some postdoc research in a neuroscience department at the University of Lethbridge here in Canada. Mm-hmm. And looking at different ways of having intelligent agents learn to abstract problems. So if you have a really complicated problem, can you kind of step back and look at it at a really high level and just abstract away all the details and just look at the core problem where at that level, the problem is much, much simpler. And can you solve the problem at that level and then work back down to the nitty gritty details once you've solved the problem already at the high level? And it turns out you can scale to much, much bigger problems if you can do that. We're also looking at some mechanisms for transfer learning, where if you've learned to solve one problem, can you take the bits of that problem that apply to a similar but different problem and apply those pieces of knowledge there and speed up learning that way. So yeah, so it was a lot of fun trying to kind of push the boundaries of what machine learning can do. But it's tough to live from research grant to research grant. And I had three kids at the time. So I moved to industry at that point, and I've been in industry for the last 3 years. Currently, they're calling me the director of data science at surex.com, which is an online insurance brokerage. We're using a lot of AI automation here, trying to automate away back office processes that are tedious and driving people nuts, and letting people focus on higher value tasks. So that's been my journey. I'm really excited for this podcast because I think we need more people like Gant, honestly. Like, a lot of data scientists like myself don't have really strong development background. And I think all of us are realizing now that you can't really succeed without that. So I think the field could benefit from people who have the development background and are getting into it after the fact. So I'm really excited to try to promote that through this podcast.
That's awesome. And I want to say that I'm here to ask all the dumb questions. No problem. I got you, Eric. I'll be like, hey, so about what you said there.
So if I have a dumb question, I'll just pose it as Gant wants to know.
Yes. Perfect. That's what we do at the entire company. Back at Infinite Red, that's I'm the scapegoat. I could do it here too.
It's funny because you're talking like this, and I haven't done my intro yet. And my background with machine learning is, well, I've heard of it. So I guess if Gant's asking the dumb questions, I'm asking the super dumb questions.
What are we talking about again?
That's my line. But it's interesting too because I think we all bring different ideas to it. You know, Eric, you mentioned
the
data science angle, and you know, Gant has been programming for longer than I have. But I'm kind of the podcast guy and I'm going to ask the clarifying question for the sake of the listener guy. And I think it's going to turn into something really interesting. We also have Muhammad Khan, who's also up in the Lethbridge area. He's not on today, but he's going to be joining us. And then I have another friend. I'm still talking to him, but he may be joining us in November. And he has a couple of courses on machine learning and uses it for his startup and things like that. And so I think we can get some really interesting conversations going. I've also been wanting to start a data science show. I know the two kind of complement and there's a lot of crossover, but anyway, it'll be really interesting just to see where we end up at with a lot of this stuff. And I'm also curious just to see how the two fields will merge. But yeah, so we've got the programmer guy, the data science guy, and the podcaster guy on the show.
This is a bad sitcom. This isn't a podcast.
I know, right? But yeah, that's usually the value I bring is that's awesome. I'm going to make sure that we can talk and that it goes out so people can listen to it.
It's really perfect because truth be told, even a year into it, sometimes I can find myself throwing around a few buzzwords or acronyms, and having a good balance of this combination here means that we can go deep into a concept but not leave anybody behind. So yeah, it's a perfect panel.
Yeah, when we started Ruby Rogues, I kind of held that role there too, because I'd been programming Ruby professionally for like 3 years, but I was the newest guy easily on the show. Everybody else had a ton more experience and knowledge than I did. And so, yeah, I would just show up and ask, and I'll tell you, I leveled up quick. So, I'm looking forward to that too. And I've talked to a number of people, and yeah, when we have the newer people on who are still exploring some of these ideas, and they get to ask their questions, it's really insightful for a lot of people. Even people who've been doing it for a while going, oh, I didn't realize that it incorporated that, or wow, that's a little bit narrower definition than I had thought of, but it brings in these other implications in this other area now because, yeah, I've been adding these other ideas in and I don't need to. So yeah, it's really interesting.
Awesome. Yeah, and as far as the guests, I can see we can get people. I know that there's a lot of people out there who've lightly touched machine learning in one way or another and have a lot more questions and don't know where to go. So we could probably have some guests who are looking to understand more about what they've seen, and hopefully Eric and I can help them along the way.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see where this goes. Well, I'm hoping that we can also just on this episode do a really quick intro to what machine learning is. Because I think a lot of times we conflate it with what we see, where there's this artificial intelligence that does, you know, whatever. And, you know, those seem to be more the general intelligences, which don't exist that we know of yet, or super intelligences. You know, a lot of times the machine learning is focused on a particular problem. But yeah, you know, where are they? What do they do? You know, how do people actually start experimenting with it? I'm curious what you both would recommend in those areas.
Well, what do you think about that, Gant? I mean, having just gotten into it in the last year from a development background.
Yeah, I'm trying to make Skynet. I'm pretty sure. I mean, right now I have a bunch of green terminals that are spinning numbers, and as soon as they get the launch codes, it's over. No, I mean, for me, it's really just, I think part of being a developer made it really exciting, because if you showed up and said, Gant, you know, I need you to detect if there are faces in this photo and how many there are, I guess like the nerd brain inside me would have gone, oh yeah, maybe I could start doing this, I could start doing that. And, you know, I mean, obviously I wouldn't have realized that the picture of just me would have created an insane amount of bias. I would have worked for years to create something. And the funny thing about it is just teaching the machine to figure these kinds of things out, right? To select features, to figure out the filters, to actually sit there and look through tons of examples is impressive. Like, I always use this analogy. If you were to make Grammarly, you know, something to help you with your spelling and commas and syntax, and you did that entire thing, you coded it because you know the English language perfectly, and somebody came to you and said, all right, now we want it for Spanish, like, you'd be like, absolutely not. That took me forever. You know, like, I don't know how to do it. But if you taught it to just look at examples of excellent English and learn exactly how it should be, and then somebody came along and said Spanish, you'd be like, no problem. How many other languages would you like, right? And that's the beauty of machine learning. It could do things that, you know, a single developer would be like their life's work. And I think that this power in each of our hands is just going to go next level. In the next couple of years, I agree completely with Charles. We're going to see some amazing things. And depending on who's wielding the technology, it'll be amazingly good or amazingly terrible. So I hope that the good guys, you know, and the good gals win.
You know, that's for sure. I think that what you're talking about is the thing that makes machine learning so exciting, right? Like, it's the fact that you can solve a problem that you don't actually know how to solve, right? Instead of writing an algorithm that takes inputs and produces some outputs, you can just feed in data and the machine produces the algorithm that you're looking for. So it makes it a super powerful tool. Of course, the flip side is then, because you're not writing the algorithm anymore, sometimes it learns something that you weren't expecting or something that looks like it's going to work really well and doesn't in practice. But like you say, I think, you know, within a few years, this is just going to become part of every computer science curriculum in school. And this is just going to be a tool that we all know how to use and we can all start doing amazing things with. And that's really exciting to me. But I totally agree as well that could be a good thing or a bad thing, right? Like, especially with what we're doing at SureX using AI for automation. And there's a lot of fear in the world right now about AI stealing all of our jobs and these dystopian situations where there's mass unemployment, et cetera. And I think we have the opportunity right now to have more meaningful conversations about, well, how do we use AI to empower people instead of devalue them, right? And I think this would be a good forum for those kinds of things.
Yeah, I want to say that I have very strong opinions about how I think that AI is going to make life better in the sense of, so measuring people and jobs, like, which is funny enough, something we all kind of accepted. One of the things is I can see, you know, I bring up Blockbuster versus Netflix, right? Mm-hmm. Sure, when Blockbuster went away, a lot of people who had a job, which was to like sit at a store and just manage it, those jobs went away. And a bunch of much more valuable people are very happy with Netflix and these streaming services, and a bunch of new jobs opened up specifically with like a sort of a higher value setup. There are a lot more streaming services today, and then also at the same time the quality of life of everybody, the demand went up, creating new jobs in this new setup. So I know that it's hard when you can't see what the next job is to think that the one that's going away is gone forever. But people are hard to please. There's always going to be something new for everybody to do.
Yeah. By the way, my computer finally decided to cooperate. So
yay!
There we go. But it's interesting to see where it's going to go and what problems it's going to solve. And I don't know if we really understand the impact it's going to have until we're there, right? I mean, we see, you know, things like computer vision and some of these other areas, you know, like Gant said, they've been around forever. My senior year in college, which was like 15 years ago, you know, we did a computer vision project. We were electrical engineering majors, and we still had to code some of that in. But anyway, we were building a robot that would follow a course, and so the machine the computer vision was essentially learning. Okay, you know, that's the boundary. I don't want to cross that. I got to follow this track this way. And anyway, just stuff like that. And yeah, you know, a lot of this stuff, like I said, has been around forever, and it hasn't really deeply impacted our world. And I was talking to my father-in-law the other day, and I basically said, yeah, the difference between then and now is that, because I told him we were starting the show, and I'm like, I'm super excited about it. But the difference is that we now have, between the cloud and some of the advancements that we've made just in computer speed and resources, we now have the resources to make it so that it does this stuff. It can solve more complex problems, and it can do it fast enough to where we actually get results out of it that we can use with large enough data sets. I mean, all of these things have converged too, because the data's gotten better.
Yeah.
At least more abundant. Better is probably a judgment call that, you know, we could argue. Anyway, it's really interesting to me just to see, okay, so now that we're collecting data on all these things, and, you know, we have methodologies that we figured out for determining what's good data, what's bad data, we have these really fast machines. You know, we can hand it off to the cloud and tell the cloud to work it over on a ton of machines. And then we can come out with our conclusion and see where it leads us next. We may wind up asking questions that we didn't even know we should be asking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because it draws a conclusion for us that was just outside of our regular thinking. And so that's the kind of thing that I'm looking forward to. Now, I don't know if we're going to see that necessarily within the next year or two, but I could see that in 5 years, right? We're starting to hit that in a lot of different areas where it's, you know what, we've kind of made these advancements in our understanding over 2 or 3 years. And now that we understand these different aspects of things, now we're going to push it to the next level. And it's exciting to be able to be involved in that because, yeah, it kind of brings together the mathematicians, the data scientists, the computer scientists, and whatever subject matter field expert needs to be involved in all those things. And yeah, I wanted to make sure that, you know, we're in there and helping people, you know, build their expertise now so that when that comes along, we can do that. Now, as far as the bad guys using AI and the good guys using AI, I honestly think that there's no way to avoid having the bad guys use AI. If it's out there, people.
Of course.
So, you know, the best that we can hope for, I think, is just that, you know, we empower enough regular people who want good things for the rest of the world to do good. And then hopefully, you know, the people who are trying to stop the bad guys can use AI to figure out how to stop them, I guess. But
and that's why I really love the idea of this as a podcast, because truth be told, a lot of the breakthroughs that seem to be happening, like patents stopping people, Fortune 500 companies just owning all the advanced tech. I mean, I appreciate a lot of the good things that some of these companies do, but at the same time, having only a few people make the decision means that you have to trust them to make the decision that will be nice for everybody. And I definitely think that the more people who play along in this and the more people who actually get to actively contribute to it will have a significant hold over what happens. And that's the power of computers, right? Like,
yeah,
when that showed up in homes, individuals were empowered. And, you know, as we take a look at some of the revolutions in, you know, the Industrial Revolution to like a bunch of other kinds of stuff, the more you actually had people knowing what's going on and being a part of it, the more fair it always was. And that's what I want to see here. And I think the podcast is fantastic for that, because people get excited about this, right? And I don't know if you're excited to you know, discover a way to fight a disease, or if you're just trying to make a turret that shoots paintballs at your friend. I mean, there's a lot of different applications, but what's really kind of key here is that people are involved and that we kind of help balance one another.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that a lot of the other technologies that we've seen advance at this point have been they've been along the lines of things that humans can basically control, right? Nothing outpaces our ability to think about how it's going to go and actually be used. And AI, I think, and I said AI on purpose, not machine learning, because AI encompasses a lot more things.
Sure.
But, you know, that has the potential to outpace what we can actually, you know, fundamentally figure out in our heads and make decisions about. And so that's where I see it. You know, somebody comes in, you know, even if it is for the profit motive, you know, which I don't necessarily condemn, but it doesn't always lead people to do what is best for everybody, as Gant said. You know, all that said, you know, it is a little bit worrying that we might get to that place where it completely outpaces human thought and, you know, we just don't have any way to control it. Or like Gant said, you know, a handful of people are able to control it, and thereby it gives them enough of an advantage to actually manipulate other people in other situations. Yeah, but again, you know, a lot of this is theoretical. Who knows when or how or if we're going to get there within a time frame that's going to matter or matter to us. So I don't know.
I just want to say that I think ethics are going to be a continuing stream of conversation, and I'm very interested. Because
that's always been the case with technology, though.
It's always going to be part of this, right? And and then hopefully we're seeing more and more, you know, as we talk about technology, people's brains are immediately going to go towards, oh, and how do you use this ethically?
Yeah, but I mean, in a lot of cases, it's also going to come down to, you know, we used machine learning to, like you said, cure this disease, right? So let's say it cures cancer or cures something that affects a lot of people, diabetes, or I don't know. You know, something that I don't know what the most common cause of death for, you know, people is, but, you know, assume it solves that problem, right? So, you know, more people are dying of old age instead, or dying of other causes that we also then turn machine learning on. I think a lot of people are, yeah, they're going to come at it from the what's in it for me. And I think a lot of people don't really think about the ethics until they lose some form of freedom or, you know, something else to it. And so, you know, it's incumbent on the technologists to be thinking about that while we do this.
I think that's true. I think we are quite a ways away from, you know, AI that can outthink us. I don't know if you've ever read Rodney Brooks' blog. Do either of you ever? It's really good. He's kind of a curmudgeonly guy who really breaks down this concept of like super intelligent AI and the singularity and all that kind of stuff. And he looks like, okay, why do we think this is going to happen? And then he kind of, you know, debunks each of the reasons. It's kind of a good, put things back in perspective after you've watched a scare news article about super intelligent AI that's going to take over the world. So I really love that blog. I think that'd be a good place to listeners to start when thinking about these kinds of things. But I do agree, though, that these technologies are going to be used in ways that we can't even really imagine right now, and that there is kind of a responsibility to work ethics into it right now at the ground floor and think about, you know, what is our responsibility to our you know, fellow men and women, and how can we use AI to improve living conditions, improve opportunities, improve the value of humans going forward. And like you said, that's kind of the role of all technology, really. But because this is the field I'm in, this is where I choose to focus.
Well, and it's interesting, too, that we're in a position to where, yeah, on all of this stuff, we've had to reinvent our ethics to some degree or extend them to new technology. And so it's not so different a conversation. It's just that the nature of this technology might be different enough to where we have to stretch again in a different way.
Oh, yeah. And the truth of the matter is, like, I think that it's good to have high-level conversation because, I mean, you could do something that you think is fantastic, but we did talk about jobs, right? So if you did something a doctor could do and that person still has, you know, $100,000 worth of student debt, and you essentially erase their job, it has a significant impact on lives. Even if you're saving lives, like, it makes a complicated situation, puts a price tag on everybody. So the problems get pretty complicated because the solutions are getting more and more elaborate and cheap. And I think that we're going to see, I mean, if you want to name some stuff, you know, we can go deeper into what machine learning is, but how people are applying it, the biases that they have like built into it, it's a big trade-off. You know, are they making lives better or are they writing? There was an app that was pulled off the app store not that long ago, which was like the undressing app, which you take a picture of a person and then it was trying to estimate what they would look like without their clothes. And everyone lost their minds. It got pulled off the store almost instantly. But just the fact that someone went ahead and spent a lot of time and research to make something like that, you know, that's what they were doing. They weren't curing a disease. They were trying to see under people's clothes. So there's a lot of really interesting adventures out there on what's going on and how people are spending their time and energy with this. And so when it does get into everybody's hands, there's sort of this unveiling of what it is that they're trying to solve for better or for worse.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I mean, we started a blockchain show, which has real implications for the way that we share data and economics, obviously, with the cryptocurrencies. And then we're talking about this that, I mean, I keep hearing people talk about the possibility of like deep fakes and things like that. And, you know, you can you could use machine learning essentially to figure out how to doctor a video so that it looks and sounds and is undetectable, right? Because you run it through your detection algorithms and none of them picked it up. So it's a, you know, it's a plausible deep fake. I mean, does it get to the point where the machine learning is used in ways that sort of undermine social trust and, you know, or, you know, where you find ways of, manipulating people, you know, so you run through machine learning scenarios and figure out, you know, how to push certain narratives or anyway, it's really, really fascinating just to see there are a lot of social implications to this, you know, and then, talking about, okay, do we make somebody's job go away? And if it makes a million people's lives better and makes, you know, 1,000 people unemployed, is that a trade-off that's worth making? That's a hard case to make because, each person has their own in intrinsic value. And so you don't want to hurt these people to help those people, but at the same time, you know, do the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, to quote Star Trek?
But at the same time, though, maybe this is an opportunity for us to rethink what it means to be employed, right? Like Keynes, 100 years ago, predicted that with advances in technology, we'd be able to automate away so much of our work that we'd be able to work a 2 or 3 day work week and spend the rest of the time on education and family and the arts. And, you know, his predictions about advances in technology have come true, but his predictions about what we would do with the extra wealth have not come true. And I'm wondering if there's a chance for us as a society to rethink why that is and if it should be.
That's a really good point because I've heard it. Henry Ford thought the same thing. A lot of people have been talking about this ability for people to kind of go after their life's purpose, but yet we find a lot of people, you know, still chained to a desk. And so I would love to help with that. And I agree. I think that AI is a potential for us to do that as long as we don't end up with, I guess, just certain people who have control over everything, right? So I do hope that'd be really good. It's definitely exciting. Something people need to get their hands on and start working with.
I do want to point out that, you know, we're talking about some of the social implications of AI or machine learning, you know, depending on how you're looking at it. I think it's worth having those conversations. But I really did want to focus this show more on the how, right? Because there are a lot of other shows where you have business people talking about AI or machine learning, and they're talking about some of the implications for business and for society and things like that. And I think those conversations are happening there. But I don't see a lot of shows where they're talking about, you know, here's a model that we're going to use, or here's a technology that we're going to use to interface with the system, or, you know, how do you actually use TensorFlow.js or things like that? Because that's not the level that most people are coming at this from. And so, you know, I'm hoping that the majority of our conversations will happen around that. What can I do with it? How do I do it? And then, you know, I think occasionally we should get into the social or, you know, moral implications of it. I really want to make this kind of a developer technologist focused show. So that said, and since this is an introduction, how do people get a good introduction to machine learning if they want to start playing with it?
Do you want to go first, Kent?
Okay. I'll say specifically that my experience is going to be very different, obviously. I'll say that you have to identify what it is that you want to do. Do you want to understand, you know, some people when they get into programming, they have to understand how zeros and ones on a computer go through a machine, digital logic, they have to understand it all the way through, building basic circuits, understanding logic gates, and then kind of know the concept from math all the way to, you know, how a computer actually functions to higher and higher level programming languages. That's sort of like the academia version of that. And for people who want or need that, I think that, you know, Andrew Ng's course on online, both his machine learning with Stanford and then also his neural networks, which is like the updated version of it. Mm-hmm. If going through that will make you feel like you could drop down into Python, JavaScript, your language of your choice, and start writing machine learning from scratch. Most people, I believe, don't fall into that category. And that's where it gets a little bit more complicated. So I think what happens coming at it from an angle as a developer, sort of like I'm a developer and I want to start really getting into machine learning. My goal on that one is you start subscribing to a bunch of uses and examples and start to see how it's getting applied. So I'd sign up for newsletters. I would actually run a Twitter account called Fun Machine Learn. And if you go to Fun Machine Learn, it's just fun, cool things that people are doing with machine learning, like beating Tetris or, you know, doing deepfakes and fun things that you can kind of mess around with. And so I think that what happens is if you get started there, it's sort of like how the web sort of pulls people in. You know, you're using it, you're looking at it, it's exciting. And then at some point you just say, I have to know how to do that. And then when that hits you, when you get that bug, that's it. Like that's the trick. You'll go learn whatever it is you need to learn. You'll read whatever books you need to read, and then you'll get there. I'm a big fan of Keras and the Deep Learning in Python book, as far as like if you want to start writing something really cool right away. And I'm also working on an online course that will be for web developers to learn machine learning. So nice. Coming in without knowing anything about machine learning, just sort of like picking up. And by the end of it, you can create your own classification system in a website and understand everything about tensors and models. So it really, there's a two-prong approach. Do you want to be the math guru who doesn't care about the languages? Or do you want to leverage the cool things that are out there and figure those out so that way you can do the combinations and permutations to create something new and exciting for you? So I think that the frameworks that are out there keep you away from having to do math. and there's really cool ways for you to start off. I mean, Runway ML, things like that. Auto ML, you can do some dragging and dropping and start actually creating something right away. And that'll get you excited. That's the two paths I'd recommend. Eric, what about you?
No, I think that sounds great. So I've kind of encountered two different schools of thought on this. The first one says that, you know, shallow knowledge is dangerous knowledge, and you do need to learn all the math and take 2 years of calculus so you can do gradient descent. And right. And when I came out of school, I felt that way. But then I started seeing, you know, blog posts where some 16-year-old kid in his basement has built a deep learning model that plays Mario Kart or something, right? And mm-hmm. and you look at what they did, and they did it right, you know, like they did good work. Like maybe there's a few things they could do to optimize a bit, or they didn't quite measure the accuracy of their model quite right. But by and large, like it's good. They're doing good stuff. And so I've kind of started to realize that, I think the approach you describe is the right one. I think especially listeners of this podcast who have the solid development background, they can code better than I can. They understand, you know, object-oriented design and building scalable, maintainable software. And all they're really missing is just the kind of practical hands-on know-how of how to take some machine learning libraries and apply them to real problems. So yeah, I think Andrew Ng's course, I really like that course. It's great. And if you do want to understand the inner workings of this stuff, which to be fair, you will need to understand that stuff if you want to really do something totally original. But I think start with those machine learning and Python type books and courses. I absolutely agree with playing around with Keras and deep learning in Python. I would add to do some sklearn and like some stuff that's not deep learning as well. Like deep learning is great, but it's you need so much data and the model ends up being so complicated that if something goes wrong, you might not necessarily know what or how to fix it. Whereas if you start with like a simpler, like a decision tree or a linear regression or something that's not as sexy, but still kind of gets your hands dirty and learn, like playing around with these concepts of a model that learns from data, I think you're far better off to take that approach. And then once you've got like a good feel, a good practical intuition for how to use these things, then you can dive into the math and the logic gates and stuff and really learn what's going on under the hood and start to write your own stuff that's even cooler than what other people are using. Anyway, so that's kind of my opinion. And like I said, I'm still kind of new to the field. My opinion is still evolving, I think, but that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I took Andrew Ng's course as well. I took it on Coursera, but I think it's offered by Stanford. I think that's the same one.
That's it. That's the one. I respect anybody who makes it through that course.
Oh, well, I didn't say I made it all the way through. I think I made it like a couple weeks in, but I started to get the ideas. And yeah, it was really helpful. He explains things really well. So
yeah. And that's a great, I mean, that's just a great way to feel, because I've talked to some people who I thought, oh, this person's going to be excited to know that they can do this immediately and they don't have to understand exactly what's happening, and all their questions come back to, how in the hell does this work? And so I've changed from, okay, you know, like you don't need to understand the underlying stuff, to it's there. Jump in whenever you like. But, you know, I think that you have to love what it is you're building first. And that's the same thing that happens for anybody in computer programming. You want to make a website say hello world. You want to make, you know, a terminal say hello world. You want to kind of get control into this really cool and interesting place. And so when you see your computer identifying that, hey, there's a dog in this photo, you're like, okay, I need to find out how it does that. And then you can dig in as much as you really want to.
Absolutely. If you want an idea of a fun, like, cause I think it's good to start with just a fun project, right? Something that's just kind of quirky and you're excited to do on the weekends. Anything with sports is a good place to start because there's tons of free, publicly available data that's perfectly curated and it's easy to access. When I was in my PhD, there was about a 6-month stretch where I was just collecting data from scoliosis patients. And I was so bored. And I built this prediction model that would predict UFC fight winners. And it actually turned out to be quite easy to do because there's so much data out there that's just free. And so anyway, if you're looking for an idea, if anyone's looking for an idea of kind of a fun just place to go and get your hands dirty, sports is a good place to do it.
Cool. Nice. I've always wanted to do this with the stock market.
Yeah. So you want to make a bot to go trade with the other bots, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. I think. I mean, I would probably just, you know, I wouldn't put any real money behind it until I was super confident in it. But I think it'd be a fun exercise to just say, okay, the bot would have bought it this time. It would have sold it this time. You know, how much money would it have made? And of course, then I can kick myself later when I'm going, it would have made me like $200,000.
So you want to like relive the, I wish I'd bought a Bitcoin over and over and over again is what you want.
Something like that. Funny story, somebody sent me Bitcoin way back in the day when I was doing screencasts on Ruby on Rails, and I lost the wallet.
Yeah, I have the same story.
So yeah.
I mean, but
I would have paid off my house by now, but yeah.
Machine learning is a much happier place.
Maybe I can use machine learning to go figure out how to get into my wallet.
Oh, wow. I think you need a quantum computer now.
Probably. Yeah. I hear they're getting close on that too, which might be another interesting combination of the two.
Yeah. I heard recently Google solved a problem in 3 minutes that would have taken the most powerful IBM computer, like, you know, 100,000 years or something like that. So that quantum computing plus machine learning is going to be wild.
It's interesting to me though that in that case, you know, the quantum computing plus machine learning, it's not the machine learning algorithms or any of the techniques that we reinvent to get there that are going to make up the difference. It's actually the advancements on the hardware. And it's kind of been both that have gotten us where we are now, but quantum computing.
Yeah, like the deep learning techniques that are making all the headlines now were invented like decades ago, right? But just because we have so much better GPUs now that they're able to achieve so much.
Well, and I can run it on my own machine with the smallish, you know, smallish being hundreds of thousands of records data set. And I can wind up with a model that's going to work reasonably well in, you know, hours or days.
You know what would be a really good thing, I think, for our listeners on this episode is, it was a little, and Eric, maybe you can help out with this because I have a patchy understanding of how this happened. The idea of machine learning and the idea of representing neurons and perceptrons and computer science existed, like started in the late 40s and in the 50s and 60s, like people really thought that this was going to be a thing. And everybody was saying sort of what we're saying now. In the next 10 years, computers will be doing this, computers will be doing that. And then it hit an AI winter and nobody really paid attention. And going into AI just sort of felt like this really vacant field as far as I could see. And then kind of resurfaced back in 2012. From my perspective, I've kind of got my history on it, but people hearing that it's been around for so long, it hasn't been doing anything. Do you have any, do you have your perspective on why we hit an AI winter and why we won't hit one now?
That's a great question. I don't know that I am the right person to answer that. I mean, I think you're right about a lot of the ideas that we're using now and being invented before the AI winter. Like there's actually a mathematical proof. I don't remember the year, but I should find the paper. But anyway, there's a mathematical proof that a multi-layer perceptron can learn to mimic any function, which means in theory that a neural network can learn to do anything. And there's a proof of that, like from before the AI winter, but it's not until I don't know if it's just the advancements in computing power that have made some of these things more feasible or not. But I am worried about another AI winter, because I think that the media has really exaggerated what is possible, at least in the very near future. And so I think there is a risk that, you know, that bubble will pop at some point and people will stop funding AI to the degree that they are now.
Yeah. I remember that didn't somebody publish a paper saying that like a perceptron couldn't even do an exclusive OR function or something like that? I can't remember exactly what it is, but maybe I'll do the research and we'll come back next episode.
Yeah, me too. That's a good idea.
Yeah. And then what would be fantastic is like for a while there, we didn't have the processing power, the data, and a couple of really major people came out against the whole, you know, AI going into a deep learning sort of methodology. And then I guess with ImageNet in 2012, people started saying, oh, never mind, we can do some of this stuff. So
right. It's
a little bit of like a spotty history on what happened between here and there. But I think and I hope that we're going to just see everything catch on fire for the next, you know, it's just going to go wild. I don't think we could see another AI winter if we wanted to. Even if the media overblows anything, probably would just bring more attention to it.
I hope you're right. Yeah.
Cool. I have one more question and then we'll do some picks. The question is essentially, I hear terms like AI, machine learning, deep learning used interchangeably. Is there really a conceptual difference between them, and how would you define each term?
It probably depends who you ask, but I think AI would be like the super category, and machine learning would be a subcategory of AI, mm-hmm. I think. And deep learning then is, again, a subcategory of machine learning. That's how I see it. So there's other parts of AI besides machine learning, like search, for example, is probably, by rights, should be considered part of AI, natural language processing, that sort of stuff. And there's other other elements of machine learning besides deep learning. Deep learning is a particular family of machine learning algorithms that is particularly powerful, but it's part of a much bigger machine learning picture.
Yeah, I would follow that. Exactly. AI is this umbrella of just intelligence that's coming out of a mechanism that's not a human being. Underneath that, there's artificial narrow intelligence and artificial general intelligence. All the machine learning stuff is in the artificial narrow intelligence, the ANI section, which is like, is there a dog in this picture? and sort of like identifying these almost human capable things, but in a very simplistic way, not actually generalizing to the next step. And machine learning is passing a lot of examples and letting the machine figure out those kinds of things. And under machine learning, there's a bunch of subcategories. And the idea of adding a bunch of hidden layers to a machine learning model starts to make those hidden layers go deeper and deeper. And I think that people are talking about that brought in deep learning. So deep learning is more of the concept of adding more and more hidden layers to let the machine learning model get some very advanced results.
Nice. All right. Well, let's go ahead and do some picks. Now, I know, Gant, you've been on some of the shows and know what picks are. Eric, you're probably not as familiar. What we do at the end of the show is we just shout out about stuff we like. And cool. That's really what it boils down to. So, you know, usually there's a TV show brought up in most of the episodes. Sometimes there are books or, I mean, I've heard political candidates been picked on the shows before. So, I mean, whatever your fancy is, I don't endorse anyone's decision, especially on political candidates. But, you know, I mean, whatever, you know, if you want to give somebody some props on the show, then by all means. So, Gant, why don't you go ahead and lead us out?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think I'm working very hard on making that web to AI course. So it is basically my morning, noon, and night. It is just what I'm working all the time. So I'm definitely going to use that as my pick for this one, because it's just such an exciting kind of avenue, not only from my perspective as teaching it and coming up with interesting examples, but also I currently have some alpha testers taking it and getting their feedback, and it's really a lot of fun. So it'll be up on academy.infinite.red. We'll have that set up, and you'll take the course. And at the end of it, if you can't start actually implementing machine learning in the browser right then and there, then I'll give you your money back. Like this is by far, like, I want to make it as tangible for my web and React Native and JavaScript developing friends as possible. So I expect that you show up knowing JavaScript. That's the big concern. You know JavaScript, I'll get you actually using machine learning with TensorFlow.js.
Cool.
Nice. Now I want to go check it out.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Eric, do you have something you want to shout out about, or should I jump in first?
Off the top of my head, I like that Rodney Brooks blog that I mentioned earlier is a good blog to read. It's just rodneybrooks.com/blog.
Nice.
It's a fun read.
Good deal. Can you guys put links to those in the chat? I'm going to jump in with a couple of picks then. The first pick that I have, I'm going to be at a conference. I'm going to be in a number of conferences, actually. And I just realized that the conference I was going to pick is probably going to be over by the time this goes live, because we usually hang in there to have 4 or 5 episodes before we launch, which puts the launch for this at the end of October. So I'm going to San Francisco for Jamstack Conf in the middle of October. That's what I was going to pick. So if you were there and you managed to run into me, great. It was good to see you. I'm going to be in Nashville the last weekend in October, and I'm probably going to throw together a meetup there. That's going to be right around when this comes out. So if you're in the Nashville area and you want to come say hello, go to devchat.tv/events, and I should have something up there by the time this goes up. A week or so after that, I'm going to be at Microsoft Ignite.
And oh, nice. So,
and that's in Orlando. And I'll probably actually see if I can pin down some of the machine learning and AI folks that work for Microsoft and see if we can get some of them to show up. So yeah, so I'll kind of be working that angle there. It's one of those conferences where Microsoft has their finger in so many pies that I wind up coming away with a few guests for a bunch of the shows, a couple of potential sponsors, and some new friends. So it turns out to be a really positive thing for me. So I'm not going specifically for this show. I'm going mostly for Ruby Rogues and JavaScript Jabber. But that said, I mean, I go out of my way to line up people for the rest of the stuff. So I'll wind up doing a meetup in Orlando as well. Again, devchat.tv/events. And then I'm going to be at KubeCon in mid-November, and that's in San Diego. So again, if you want to meet up, I'm probably going to be doing a meetup. If you're going to be at the conference, like you actually have a ticket, I'm cool actually meeting people at the conference too. So, and that's for our newer show, Adventures in DevOps. You know, again, finding sponsors and guests and hosts and all that stuff. So we're doing a lot of stuff there. And yeah, that's kind of what I've got in the works as far as where I'm going to be at. And then the other pick I have, since Gant's plugging his course, I'm putting together a membership site for all of the devchat.tv stuff. It's got kind of a different focus, and I'm kind of refocusing the DevRev, which is a video/YouTube show that I've been putting off starting up again for a while. I'm going to refocus it on this topic. But what I find is that a lot of the folks I talk to, there are some resources out there that they can go to build their tech skills, but nobody talks to them about the other stuff. So, you know, the practices that make them more efficient at work, or the, you know, how do you actually talk to your coworkers? How do you talk to your boss? How do you advance in your career to get to where you want to go is really the thing. And what really brought this home for me was the tweets about the 10X engineer that came out on Twitter that everybody bagged on. I'm sitting there going, hey, I hate the idea of trying to tell somebody they need to be 10 times more efficient or productive than another person, because it's hard to measure what that really means in code. So what I'm looking at is, I've had the pleasure of working with or talking to on the podcast or whatever, people that I deem to be what I'm calling max coders. And they're the people that get in and they do awesome work. They seem to have this sort of innate sense of what's going on, a lot of it born out of experience. They have, in some ways, an encyclopedic knowledge of what they're learning. They have some form of natural leadership that they exhibit, even if they're not the team lead. And I go on and on and on, but they're essentially the coworkers that you all wish you had or could be. And so I'm trying to start a movement where we actually talk about these things, talk about who these people are, how you become those people, how you find those people if you're hiring people, and that sort of thing. And really push the community forward in a way that says, look, these are the kinds of engineers we want to be, not 10 times more efficient than other engineers, but just, you know, these kinds of, you know, productive, well-meaning people that are nice to have at work, blah, 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 right? So yeah, so it's going to be at maxcoders.io. I'm going to bring in people that I think either speak to this or are max coders. You know, we'll do webinars and things like that. And then I'm probably going to spin off like sort of the Max Ruby or Max React Native or Max Machine Learning. And then we'll have experts come in and say, okay, and these are the technical things that you need to be thinking about in this field. But initially it's just the, hey, how do you just become the kind of engineer that just knocks it out of the park for everybody involved, for the company you work for the people you work with, for your boss, for your family, you know, and there's going to be some focus on that too, right? Building the lifestyle too. Cause if your yes. home life doesn't line up and you're not having a good time there, you know, if your work is everything and things like that, what's the point? And so it really is kind of a holistic approach to that too. So
that's awesome. And I mean, plus one on soft skills for developers. There's a study that says like each EQ, like emotion quotient of how well you kind of understand and communicate with people, what that relates to in salary. And for developers, it's ridiculous. It's like each level up in EQ is another $4,000 you should be making a year.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, you being able to gather the problem before you actually get to being good at a computer is equal importance to how good you are at programming.
Yeah. The other thing is that more and more, like in the 80s and 70s, a lot of these programmers could go off on their own, write up the whole program by themselves. You know, it was kind of almost a stereotype because, you know, people would do it. I don't know if it was as common as people made it out to be. But nowadays, we're building such complicated systems that you have to have many, many people involved.
Yeah.
And the forcing function on all of that is your ability to work with other people.
Absolutely. I mean, DevOps is a thing now. You don't have it on a hard drive in your basement. Like, your code has to go everywhere, be touched everywhere. Yep.
Other people are going to be working on it.
Yeah. And you know, you're not going to always be the person to maintain it anymore. Yeah. It's very different from the 70s and 80s programmer lifestyle. That's why we're building bigger and better things. You know, it's not one person building a house. It's a team.
Yep. And so what I found is that most companies that have the teams that are really knocking it out of the park, they hire first for the soft skills and for basic competency. I mean, there has to be a basic level of competency with what you're doing, but they're totally willing to train the rest of it because they lose more on the people who don't have the good soft skills than they gain on the people that have the good hard tech skills.
You know, I know it's not part of this podcast, but that reminds me exactly. There's a blog post that says, fire your Ricks from like Rick and Morty. If you've got one person who can't relate with anybody, and even though they're the genius and everything like that, it's a great blog post. I'll put it so we can put it in the show notes, but it's like, fire that person. You can't have your company depend on people like that.
Yeah.
It's bad for the other employees and it's bad for the company.
Yeah. On the DevEd podcast, Jesse Sanders brought this up. He basically said there are four quadrants and, you know, the two axes are how well they fit into your company culture and the way you do things. And then technical competence is the other axis. And so basically he says, you want people to be as far, you know, up and to the right as possible, right? Because then they align with your company, culture, values, et cetera, you know, the way you do things, and they're highly technically competent. He said the people who are highly technically competent but don't align, he had names for all four of them, but the people in that quadrant were the terrorists. Yeah. Because they could hold you hostage, right? Because of their technical expertise, but they were actually terrorizing. And your top talent will leave because they're not, you know, getting what they're there for. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
Let them go before they terrorize your top people. Sorry, Eric, what were you saying?
No, I was just agreeing with that last point. We've seen similar situations like that where you end up with someone who kind of holds the whole group hostage.
So one thing I do want to say is that we have some guests already lined up to show up, and I know for a fact that they are not terrorists. They are amazing people. So we have some really cool people coming in, like the guy who did Deoldify and Robert Plummer, who actually maintains Brain.js and also does he's added a lot to GPU.js. Mm-hmm. So there's some really good stuff. But I think that's the thing. Like if you're really awesome and you're willing to go on podcasts and talk to people, like that's the combination.
Yeah, it's a good indication that you're willing to participate and play ball with other people.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, good.
Although
deal.
Sometimes it is fun to talk to the terrorists. I mean, we wouldn't want to work with them, but they are super smart, right? Like there are things you can learn from them.
That's true. They're usually, even if we get one on the show, they're not terrorists on the show because it's only an hour long.
Right.
But yeah, thanks both of you for coming and chatting this morning. Yeah, we have some awesome guests coming. Looking forward to a lot of that. Yeah, we'll have another episode next week.
Ciao.
Thanks so much.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.